Chodesh Tov Bevorach. Today's daf in Masechet Yevamos, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nunhei. We're holding five lines up from the bottom of Nundalad Amud Beit. So we've been searching for the mocker of all of the places in which we find that we have a relationship that is Bein Min Ha'av, Bein Min Ha'em, that a relationship that comes through Achva would apply under all circumstances, except in those unique places where we've said not, like let's say Dodato. But the question is, how do we know that? So we've got another interesting Mishnah here, which we haven't discussed yet. And that's the din of the Achot Isha. How do we know that an Achot Isha is considered to be a sister, Bein Min Ha'av or Bein Min Ha'em? That's our question for the day. So we need to establish from a Mishnah that indeed that's the case. We have a very cute case over here that brings that out. And this case is built on a guy who goes overseas and leaves his wife behind. He then gets telegram to tell him that his wife had died. So that's how it starts. So here's how it begins in the Mishnah. So Amrulo Meta Ishtecha, your wife died. So he goes ahead and he marries his wife's Achota Miavia, her paternal sister. Okay, he gets another telegram on his next trip that wife has died. Okay, so then he goes ahead and he now marries the second wife's, in other words, her sister, but and this time it's a maternal sister. Then the same thing happens when he finds out that his third wife has died. So he marries her paternal sister. And then he finds out that his fourth wife has died. So then he marries the maternal sister. And then it turns out that none of these women had actually died. So now he's in an interesting situation. So the halacha over there is, he is allowed to retain the first wife, the third wife, and the fifth wife, correct? Because they are not related to each other at all. Remember, I can ease the situation to you. Obviously, whenever you end up having a marriage to a person that had children from another marriage, the two children are not related to each other. Your children and that wife's children are not related to each other. And that's essentially what's happening over here. So this guy, if you imagine that you've got one woman that has a mother and a father, then has her sister from that mother, but not from the father, has another sister from the father, but not from the mother that he married afterwards, who then has her own child, which is a sister to the woman from the same mother, but not from the same father. And this just keeps going. So basically, your wife, number one, was related to the wife that's right next to her. And that's all. So she is related from either father or mother. In this case, it was from the same father to the wife right next to her. Wife number two was related only to the one that's next to her, and so on and so forth. But every other wife is unrelated to the other. And therefore, if his first wife is still his wife because she never died, so then he is going to have to get rid of, obviously get rid of, he doesn't have to give her a get, but he's not married to wife number two, who was her paternal sister. And since he is married, therefore, however, to wife number three, so then wife number four is out of the ring, and so on and so forth. So he remains usher to woman number two that he took supposedly as a wife, but ended up being an erva, and number four, who was actually a sister to wife number three, who is a real wife, and therefore he is usher in wife number two and four. And therefore, what happens over here is that he, if he dies, And he now has a Yibum issue. So then the ones that are his real wives are only 1, 3, and 5. And if the Yavam is going to go ahead and do Yibum with any of those, 1, 3, or 5, they will all pater the others, right? Masha Enkein, of course, there is absolutely no heter for this guy to ever sleep with number 2 or number 4, unless wife number 1 actually ends up dying, or number 3 ends up actually dying. But he's usher in them. And if he dies, then those are not his wives. So if the Yavam gives Yibam to either of those wives, thinking that they are wives, it's not going to make any difference. He's still going to, we need to do a real Yibam with a real wife, which is either wife 1, 3, or 5. Okay. Now, there's also, I mean, imagine that the first wife actually did die, right? And that's the only one that turns out to be correct. So then he's allowed to keep wife number 2 and 4. But then if he dies, only 2 and 4 will pater the bias from Yibum. The other ones, number 3 and number 5, are not going to pater, and he is never allowed to sleep with them. But what does this show? It's a very simple case, really. It sounds complicated, but what it shows is that there is a complete din of Iser Eshet Ach. The raya is that if you did Yibum with any of these others, it would have absolutely no impact on the others, and you should just go ahead and be Miyabim, the correct wives, which means that this is not a Darabonan. This is not an Iser Lav, which would still allow you to be technically married, and it would create all kinds of problems with the Yibam. It means it's straight out, 100%, an Iser Erva with Chorus of a sister's wife, whether that sister's wife shared a mother with your sister or shared a father with your sister. That's what we see from here. Okay, so now that we've proven that that's the case, what's the source? Minala. Where do we know, along with all the questions that we asked yesterday about defining Achva, in this case, how do we know that Achva, that is to say, the relationship of Achot Isha, is true even if it's your wife's sister from a common mother and not from a common father? Well, isn't it simple? I mean, basically, your wife's sister is the same sort of Isser as your own sister, right? So in other words, you can't sleep with your own sister. And when you marry a woman who has a sister, so then that becomes the same idea of taking your own sister. So just like your own sister, it said beferish in the pasuk, bein mina av, bein mina em. It says bata vicho bati mecha. It can't get clearer than that. So afkan, so your wife's sister ought to be very simple, mina av, bein mina av, bein mina em, because that's how the Torah defines sisterhood. No, not necessarily. There's another case of brotherhood that defines the nature of brotherhood, which is sisterhood. And let's talk about that case. And this is the case that's always thrown a monkey wrench in our calculations. And this is the case of the wives of your father's brother, which we're calling over your dodato. But it's only if your father's brother is from a common father, not if your father's brother is only from a common mother. So then if that's the case, the Torah has defined the idea of brotherhood in terms of an av. So it's only paternal brotherhood. So maybe over here, a wife's sister is only mina av, velo mina em. Well, I mean, think about it. What's it more reasonable to learn from? Should we learn it from a sister, or should we learn it from your father's brother's wife? I mean, come on. Isn't it more mistaber to learn it out of your own sister because sheken krove atzmo mi krove atzmo. I mean, your marriage to your wife, that's your own relative. You created that relationship, right? And certainly your sister is because it's your own relative. Masha Inkin, when you're talking about your father's brother's wife, I mean, that's like a step away. Your father's brother created that relationship. So it makes perfectly good sense to derive the din of your own relationships from your own relationships. Well, I start looking at my father's brother's wife to tell me. And that makes more sense, as the Gemara, not necessarily, because there's another way of looking at this. It makes more sense to learn it out of your auntie, who is your father's brother's wife, because how did that happen? That happened because it came about through marriage, right? Okay, so I understand one is your marriage, one is his marriage. But the point is that it's the type of erva that related only, it was created only through marriage. Now, your sister was not created through marriage. It's a genealogical relationship. So doesn't it make more sense to learn out marital relationships from marital relationships as opposed to a relationship which is genealogical, to learn it out of a marital relationship? That makes perfectly good sense to me. And therefore, I should learn out the wife's sister from your father's brother's wife, because both of those are wives. And over there, if we define the relationship of Dodato to be limited to a paternal brother, wife, we should limit the nature of the achoto to a paternal sister's, in this case, your wife, right? Okay, fine. So let's look for another basis to this halacha. How do I know that the din is that your wife's sister, whether a maternal sister or a paternal sister, is usher? You know how we know it? We know it from Eshet Ach. Okay? Eshet Ach is actually only an Eshet Ach, which of course we're going to have to now go to prove. But let's assume your brother's wife, which of course is our real concern here at the bottom of everything in terms of Maseches Yevamos. So your brother's wife is Asura to you, whether that brother is your brother from the same father where there's Yibum, or a brother from the same mother where there's no Yibum. But in either case, if there is not a Yibum, it is an Isser Karis of Eshes Ach, even though it's your Ach from your mother. So the same way that that's true, so too is your wife's sister. Because look, this is created by marriage. In one case, it's created by your mother, by your brother's marriage. In one case, it's created by your marriage. And it's your own relationships, because the marriage of the Eshet, the Achot Isha, is your marriage. And it's your own relationship because your brother is your own genealogical relationship. So that would be a different way to parse it. So therefore, we can learn it out from Eshet Ach that has both advantages. Okay. But of course, all of that is built upon an assumption. The assumption being that an Eshet Ach is considered to be an Eshet Ach, even though it's only a brother from a common mother. It's a little bit strange, because remember, throughout this whole Masechet, how have we defined the brother who is Mechayev you in Yibum? We learned it out from the din of Yerusha and the brothers, meaning the children of Yaakov Avinu, all of those were relationships through a father. So how do we know, and how are we so certain, that a relationship of a common mother is sufficient? You're taking that for granted. So Eshet Ach Guf Aminoah, where do we know that from? Well, in the Braita, it puts it like this. The Torah says, Eshet Achicha, Ervat Eshet Achicha Lo Tigale. So, okay, that is, but just remember the whole pasuk, because we're going to be referring to the end of the pasuk. The end of the pasuk is actually in Chutz Laretz. You just had that pasuk this week. And it adds the completely unnecessary words, Ervat eshet achicha lo tegaleh, ervat achicha hu. I mean, so what's added by saying ervat achicha hu? So now the Braita just begins with the beginning of the pasuk in Achrimot. Ervat eshet achicha lo tegaleh. That asserts the Braita arbitrarily. Bein menav bein menayim. Well, so says you. Ata omer bein menav bein menayim. Prove it. O eina ela menav lo menayim. Well, I mean, it's only reasonable, isn't it? But dinu, if the Torah is mechayev you on the erva of an eshet ach, and it's also mechayev you on the erva of your own sister, so then that means that brotherhood and sisterhood, the yisurim that are come out of them, should be the same. And sisterhood, if it's your sister, it says beferish in the pasuk. Bat avicha o bat imecha. So, okay, so sisterhood is bein mina av, bein mina aim. So this is essentially a sisterhood. In other words, your brother's wife, as we've found, we always look at the woman that's in the position of a marital relationship, which is the equivalent of your own direct genealogical relationship, to be the same. So if your genealogical relationship to your sister is the sister, whether from a father or a mother, and that's beferish in the pasuk, so then your relationship to your marital sister, meaning your brother's wife, should also be bein mina av, bein mina aim. Well, maybe I could show you a completely different way of looking at it, which would lead to the opposite conclusion. Maybe we should look at it like this. Kalach l'derech zu. The Torah holds your chayiv over here for sleeping with your brother's wife. But the Torah also says your chayiv for sleeping with your father's brother's wife. Now, both of these are brother's wives. One of them is your brother's wife. The other is your father's brother's wife. But as we saw, the only chiyuv on the father's brother's wife is where it is your father's brother from a common father. So it's a paternal father's brother's paternal brother's wife, right? So maybe here too, we're talking about your brother's wife, which should be the same thing as your father's brother's wife, and it should be defined by common paternity rather than common maternity. Okay, so why not? So you don't know. Okay, so you don't know. What's the standard thing to do in that case? Let's analyze which one makes more sense in terms of the set to which it belongs. So Nir Lamid Domeh. Once again, we go through the Nir Lamid Domeh and we try to parse the sets of the Arias properly. So the din of a brother's wife should be more comparable to the relationship to your sister than to your father's brother's wife, wouldn't you say? I mean, both of those cases, your sister or your brother's wife, are basically your own relatives. They're krovei atzmo. One genealogically is your brother, and the other one is your own engagement in marriage, but it all comes from you, right? And Mashain Kane, if we're going to start looking at Dodato, we're introducing a totally new level of Erva, which is created by someone else's marriage entirely. And therefore, we start with the brother of the father, and then he has to go and get married. So therefore, we should forget about that case. Well, not necessarily, says the Gemara. I mean, here's another way to look at it, a different way to parse it. We should take basically arias that come through marriage. I don't care whose marriage it is. Now, wouldn't you say that marital arias are always going to be different than genealogical arias? That's a very obvious way to parse arias, in my opinion. So therefore, we should learn out your brother's wife. Brother's wife is a marital issue from your father's brother's wife, which is a marital issue, as opposed to learning it from your sister, which is a genealogical issue. So the fact that the genealogy could be shared maternity or paternity does not prove to me what the case ought to be, where the issue of the paternity or maternity is only initiated through an act of marriage. I don't care whose marriage it is. Brother's marriage, your father's brother's marriage, makes a difference to me. Point is that marital things are different than genealogical things. So I'm going to learn it out from Dodo Tov. Okay, so now we have two completely different way of parsing these sets, correct? Therefore, what do we do? So we have to go back to the Pasuk. So let's go back to the Pasuk. This is all the Braita speaking out, how that original Pasuk is going to prove to me. That's because of the unnecessary words of, we start up, Ervat Eshet Achicha. Now you're asking me, how do I know? Yeah, because you didn't read the end of the Pasuk. I know Ervat Eshet Achicha ends with this ridiculous repetition. Ervat Achicha, well, obviously. So that must be coming to tell me I'm expanding the given ideas that you would have been stuck with on your own by telling you that there is an additional Isser of Ervat Achicha, any brother, even Mina Aim. So there you go. Now we've seen that we've got a Pasuk. Okay, Bein Mina Av, Bein Mina Aim. The question is that Pasuk really available to teach me that din? Because the truth is, if I can show you that I need that Pasuk to properly define the Isser of the din of Eshet Ha'ach in the actual given, whatever Ach that would have been, which we assume would have been the Eshet Ach Min Ha'av, I need to properly define the case of that Eshet Ach. Then you'd have to admit that it isn't extra to tell me what kind of Ach. Now, I believe that you have overlooked a very fundamental question, which we touched on previously. And that was this whole idea of Eshet Ach, where we take for granted that the din of Eshet Ach remains, even though the Torah told me to do Yibum on an Eshet Ach, instead of reaching the more obvious conclusion that, you know, the reason you do Yibum on an Eshet Ach is because it's like an Eshet Ish. Once a woman's husband dies, you're allowed to marry her. And once your brother dies, you're allowed to marry the Eshet Ach, right? I mean, so if that's the case, then like we said before, but the Torah only said Yibum in the case where there were no children. Yeah, okay, fine. That's the mitzvah of Yibum, right? But that has nothing to do with the Isser. Isn't it more logical to say that once a brother dies, any brother, so once a brother dies, that then his wife becomes muteret. So if that would be the case, it's true that we did go ahead and we found the pasuk of Nidahi, right, to tell me that case. But let's analyze the theoretical possibilities over here of elements that play a role in a woman's continued Isser when she's married to your brother. Let's think about that. One question is she currently married to your brother or is she divorced? Does the Isser of Eshet Ach remain after a divorce, even though she's no longer your brother's wife? Because Eshet Ish doesn't remain after a divorce. So maybe Eshet Ach is like that. It does not continue on after divorce. So divorce is one issue. Now, death with children. It's another issue. There may not be Yibum, but is there still the Isser Karas of Eshet Ach? I don't know. I have to think about that. And how about the difference between a divorced Eshet Ach, where has children, and a divorced Eshet Ach, where there are no children? So one of them has been taken out of this theoretical possibility of Yibum, which may impact the whole idea of the heter of an Eshet Ach, and one of them has not. So that means we've got multiple factors to consider. If it turns out that we need a pasuk to address each one of those multiple factors about the given Eshet Ach, which we would have no right to say includes a maternal brother, maybe it doesn't. Then if we need three separate psukim to address all of those variations, we don't have available Ervat Achi Chayim to teach me what you're claiming, namely that it is a brother, even though it's your maternal brother, right? So that's not enough. I'm glad that there are people here who think that by giving me a 5-second glimpse of the fact that there's a human being behind the name, that that proves that there's a continued human being behind the name. I, again, object vehemently. And, you know, especially, I mean, Calvin takes off that picture. All you see is monsters chasing him. You don't see a person. And the same thing is true with Gavi. I mean, maybe all you see is hills and trees. Is there actually a Gavi behind the trademark? Those kind of questions. You know, I'm not sure. And, of course, there's Yaakov, who never shows his face. But, okay, I understand he lives in the 18th century. He doesn't have a camera. I can't have tinness to that. But I know perfectly well that Naftali's got himself a good camera, and he's not showing up. I know that the Rebbe's got a good camera, and he's not showing up. And I won't even mention some of the other serious people over here who are currently on a tractor, and they're not showing up. So I register once again my profound complaints. Anyway, moving back to the sugya, which I'd be able to get through much. The tractor's in the background, not in the foreground. All right, so I almost caught you. Very good. Okay. See, that's lovely. What a difference it makes. Doesn't everybody feel better? Everybody, not just me. Seriously. So please give us the benefit of your presence. Okay, so I'm asking you now, try to address every one of those variants, okay? Maybe both of those psukim are referring to a paternal brother, all right, who married a person. But I still need two psukim, because one might be there to tell me that in the event that she was divorced and she even has children, that in that case she remains asura. And one of them is to tell me that her husband is alive, but she's divorced, and she does not have children, so at least she would be within the context of this idea of Yibam had she remained married. No, remember? We learned that out. We learned that out from Rav Huna. Remember that we asked before, why does it say Nidahi? Is an Eshet Acha Nida? And we said that it comes to tell me that just like a Nida, when she's not Usher, she's fine. But when she is, she remains Anita until she actually becomes Muteret with Tfila. And the same thing is true to tell me about an Eshet Ach. She remains Ervat Achicha until she actually becomes Muteret. So we learned that out. So that I don't need a pasuk for. I learned it out from Rav Huna. Okay. Fine, I still have other issues to need the pasuk for. Maybe both of them are still talking about a paternal brother, and nonetheless, I need that extra word, Ervat Achichahi. Why? Because one of them is talking about where she has children and her husband is still alive, and one is talking about that she has children but her husband is dead, and I need to know that if she has children and her husband died, that she is still an Eshet Ach. Well, what do you mean? Well, of course. Any idiot knows that. Why do I need a special pasuk? Didn't the Torah say that you have to do Yibam, right? So why would I need a pasuk? If she has children, Le'acha Mitat Ba'ala, since the Torah says that only if she doesn't have children you do Yibam, doesn't that mean ipso facto that if she does have children, that she remains usher? No, absolutely not, says the Gemara. You are the ones that have conflated two issues, okay? And it's time for us to start teasing apart these two issues. The mitzvah of Yibam does not have any necessity of reflecting on what the din is without the mitzvah of Yibam. It's because all along you've taken for granted, without ever having proven it, that the mitzvah of Yibum is directly related to the erva of Eshet Achicha. What if I disagree with that basic assumption? What if the mitzvah of Yibum exists as a totally separate issue? A brother has no children and he dies. You have to be making shame by taking his wife. Now, how does that prove to me that if he does have children, you're not allowed to take his wife? I don't understand. This is a prejudice. It may well be that there was no Isser, and the question is, does he have children? Does he not have children? And that has to do with the mitzvah of Yibum. So maybe like this, Vidilma, if she has no children, so then the Torah is telling her, you cannot marry anyone else, says the Torah to the Yavama. You must try to have children because your dead husband was left without children. And it's telling the Yavam, you need to go and try to make those children. So in Labanim, she's a surah to everybody, and she's mutter to the Yavam. But if she does have children, then she's okay to marry whomever she wishes, including the Yavam. I mean, what's wrong with that? Or I could say, maybe the child is like this. If she does not have any children, then there's a chiyuv of Yibum. And if she does have children, so then there's no chiyuv of Yibum. But if you want to, you could certainly be miyamim. Or, you know what? I don't care, even if you want to make the two dinim interrelated, right? Explain to me what the relationship would be. That the Torah would be saying that Ein la banim, if she doesn't have children, do yibum. And therefore, let's say I want to agree with you. Your inference is okay, fine. And if she doesn't have children, then you should not be sleeping with her. Okay, what is that iser of do not sleep with her? It's only an iser that is derived from a mitzvah asay. And a lav abamichlal asay is an asay. There's not even an iser lav. There's certainly not an iser chorus. So therefore, the inference, even if it's true, is meaningless. And I don't believe in the inference in the first place. So therefore, we need this pasuk to address those issues. And how can you use it to tell me that a brother from a common mother is also called a brother? All of these assumptions, all the way up the line. My God, it's turtles all the way down. No matter where we keep looking, you're telling me that's the way it is. Like, I don't know, that's the way it is. You'll notice, of course, that that is always the way we've started each one of the discussions. You say, I love the way that you say, but how do we know any of that? And that's exactly what all of these prices are doing. They're focusing on these assumptions. You say, okay. So now we're going to talk about why do we say, now I'm back where I was. How do I have an extra pasuk of Erva Sachichayi to teach me any ach, even if it's a maternal ach? So we're stuck again. He says, okay, you're right. But you forgot the extra pasuk in Kedeshim. You're only looking at the pasuk in Ach Rimot. What are you, stuck in Cape Town or something? Look ahead. All right, so now in Kedoshim, it actually adds another pasuk. Ervat Achiv Gila. Now, what in the world is that coming to tell me? Ish asher yikach et eshet achiv. Ervat Achiv Gila. Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's sort of obvious. Isn't that what it says? So what is the meaning of that kind of pasuk, right? I don't understand what it means. It must be coming to tell me exactly this idea. And that is, it is referring to a brother from a mother as well. And we can learn it out from there. So this is a new pasuk. Wait a minute, says the Gemara. The new pasuk doesn't do me any good because I still need to have that extra pasuk because maybe all that it's showing is that the Eshet Ach, if it's really Mina'im, as the same as Eshet Ach Mina'av, so then why doesn't that reflect back on the din of Yibo. So Ma Eshitak Min Ha'av, what's the din of your paternal brother, where without children, he dies, okay? What would be if it's your maternal brother who dies without children? No, I know what you're going to say. What do you mean? We proved that it's only your paternal brother that's Mechayev Yibam. I never said anything about Yibam. There you are again with your prejudices. I just said that why is it not a new limud now that a brother from a common mother who dies should be the same as a brother from a common father who dies without children? And just like there's no iser to marry, obviously there's also chiyav yibam. I understand it doesn't have chiyav yibam for a maternal brother, but it still tells me that there's no iser, doesn't it? It's you who continue to conflate the iser of the eshet ach with the mitzvah yibam. I'm saying cut that out once and for all. If the way that I know that we're talking about a brother from a common mother is learning it from a brother from a common brother, then why are you not forced to learn that the brother from a common mother, although there clearly is no mitzvah of Yibam, also does not have an iser of Eshet Ach once the brother dies? Because I've already shown that that is not necessarily part of Yibam. This is wonderful, isn't it? Because tearing away all of these assumptions brings out finally, like, where did we come up with all of this? And of course, the Gemara always does this as it proceeds. It always, as I pointed out to you, just like nature does the same thing. We always start with conflations. Everything in nature seems to be sort of the same thing. The more sophisticated you are, the more you're able to tear apart phenomena that look to you to be exactly the same phenomena, and end up really being related only because of completely different issues, which are always more primal and open up your mind. The same thing the Gemara does, exactly the same way. Let's start taking everything for granted and then gradually challenge you to prove to me, why did you take that for granted? Okay. So therefore, why are you taking for granted that the Yesh Tach Min Ha'Ein would be a surah after the death of the husband? That is an interesting question and actually has a beautiful answer. And that is because it says in that pasuk, Ervat Achicha, he. What is he? What is it adding? Ervat Achicha, he. But remember, every time we use an existential word, any form of he, haya, who, and so on and so forth, it comes to tell me that the existential state will never be affected. So that means he behavayata tehe, however initially defined, that's the way it remains, because existential states don't change through acts, so or through coincidences. And that's the point. He happened to have died. But what does that have to do with her? So her remains Asura. Okay. Now, Achoto, I have another problem. Okay. My other problem is, I started off with the problem of why we need this mention of Nidahi if we already know that we have the Hekesh of Rabbi Yonah that tells us that all the Arayas are connected to each other. We had a lot of extra psukim before we knew that, and we kept trying to use them to prove, and we couldn't. And then we had to get to Rav Yonah. Yeah, but now what about all those psukim that we were going to use to prove the din of Hara? What do we need them for? Now I'm going to go back and ask you. Okay, you identified the extra pasuk, and now it turns out that we don't need the extra pasuk. So what's it for? So by Achoto, why do I need, since we have a general statement, Asher yaseh mikol ha-toivot ha-el, v'nichrita, right? Anybody who sleeps with any of these Arayas, that was the mocker of the Hekesh. And it says over there, the person who would do such thing is Chayev Kores. Why then did the Torah mention Kores specifically in the case of Achoto, which is completely unnecessary? Isha asher yikach et Achoto, bat avivu, bat imo, etc., etc., why do I need that? need that, as Rabbi Yochanan pointed out. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, remember that wherever we have a common statement about a list of things, we need an indication of the technical term chiluk. Chiluk means that each member of a set is treated the way that the common din of the set applies. Therefore, if you have a long list of chiyuvei karetz, and at the end it says all of these things are mechayev whoever does them karetz, which by definition means that if it would be done b'shogeg, that there would be a chiyuv of a karetz, right? How do I know if I do only one of them? The Torah says a guy who will do any of the above can mean all of the above in Hebrew, kol, same word. So anybody who does all of the above. How do I know that all means all and any? That's the question. Therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan, im asa'an kulam behelem echad, chayava kol achat v'achat. So even if you slept with every single one of those separate arayot, they would still be mechayev you a separate chatas on each one, without your having been made aware of the fact between each relationship that you did something wrong. So I understand if you would find out, of course, then you're chayev, but that's true even if it's the same iser. How about if you never found out, and the only thing that distinguishes one act from the other is which iser is it? Okay, so then you'd be chayev in every one. But wait a minute. According to Rabbi Yitzchak, I don't have that pasuk available, because according to him, what we learn out from the karet that is mentioned for ostensibly no reason in the case of Achoto, he has a completely different need for that pasuk. He says that kol chayvei kritot b'chalal hayu. Is it not true that every single one of the arayas that was chayev karas included in one statement, kol asher yaseh mikol ha-toivot ha-elu, right? Rabbi Yonah's pasuk. Okay. Now, if the Torah repeats a din that is said as a general rule on all of a set and then is repeated on a member of the set, which one of the dinim of the klolim that you darsh in the Torah, what is that? Davar shiyatza min haklal lelamed, lo lelamed al atzmo yatza, right? It's lalamed al klal kulo yatsa. So it becomes now a new insight into a very special halacha. What is that halacha? That you're only chayev karas. That's what it's stressing. And that if somebody says, don't do that, you're going to get beaten up in Besdin. You will not get beaten up in Besdin. You're only going to be chayev karas, which means that he's arguing on that fundamental idea that we take for granted, which is actually a machlokas with Rabbi Yitzchak, that all chayve kritot also represent the chi of malchus if there was hatra'ah. And the chi of karet is only where there's no malchus. He disagrees with that. He says the very fact that Torah stresses again that iser karet means that it's limiting it only an iser karet. L'chalek minalan. So according to him, we can't use the din of chiluk to prove that each one is a separate chatas from the pasuk that is coming for a totally different purpose. So he repurposes Rabbi Yochanan's pasuk. Where then does he know that din? Rabbi Yitzchak learns it out actually from Nida. Last I heard, every menstruant is a female. I have not yet identified an alternative. And therefore, when the Torah says, El Isha benidat tumata, what do you mean, Isha benidat tumata? Who else, for heaven's sake? It could have just said, El Nida, right? Which always means a menstruant woman. So what do I need to know in Isha? Oh, that's coming to tell me that every single mention of a relationship with a woman in this list is a separate chiyuv and is a chiyuv chatas separately. Okay, nice. Why don't you bring it up, though? I mean, in the pasuk of the Eshet Ach, why do we need the extra words of Aririm Yiyu, that they will die childless. Why is that not extra mention of Koras? So why do we need that for heaven's sakes? It said you're chayev in Koras. Now, this is a mistake, and the Rashash changes the girsa, and it should say aririm yamutu, because that's what's in the pasuk. Aririm, that we're asking over here, that we have the idea of aririm yamutu. That's why there's a confusion. Dodato, the dodato, which is your father's brother's wife. Over there, the lashon is aririm yamutu. Why does that need to be said, since it seems to be an extra chorus? Ah, it is, in fact. But it's coming to tell me another din. It's coming to tell me Rabba's din. Rabba pointed out we've got a contradiction, because on the one hand, we have the pasuk of aririm yihyu, and on the other hand, we have the pasuk of aririm yamutu. Now, these are two different dinim. One is an eshet ach, and one is eshet ach of your father. In both of them, it talks about aririm. The thing is that it says aririm yihyu in one case, and aririm yamutu in the case of dodato. What is the point? I mean, those don't seem to be exactly the same. As we say aririm yihyu, it seems to say that one would lose his children. But if it says aririm yamutu, it seems to be saying that if one did not have children, he will not have children up until his death if he does any of these yisurim. So, ketzad? Well, basically, we're talking about two different cases. Yesho banim, if he had children at the time, he will bury them before his own death. Ein lo banim, and if he never had children, he never will have children. But the truth is, I need to write both of these things. Aririm yihyu v'aririm yamutu, because let's imagine we only had a pasuk that would say aririm yihyu. So then I would have thought, okay, aririm yihyu would mean that up until the time that you did this chet, they will be wiped out, so you will lose his children. But from this point on, life begins again. And if he has new children, they won't die. Therefore, it says aririm yamutu. Not true. This person will die without children. On the other hand, suppose it would say aririm yamutu. So then that might mean you will not be zocha to have children that survive from the moment that you did this terrible sin. But I mean, it doesn't mean that the children that were there initially, before he did the sin, that they would die. Therefore, I need to have both of these psukim. Okay, that actually answers this problem. And now we're going back to the original issue. The original issue was, how do we know that intercourse is considered to be intercourse only with the very beginnings of penetration, which we haven't yet defined, but we call that hara. Well, that's true. All the things that you proved were true, but they were all in reference to an Isser Koras. Every last one of them. Or Isser Misa. But how about a chiv of a lav? Well, the Torah said, by the case of the Shivcha Charufa, it uses the word over there, Ishki Isha, Yishkavet Isha, Shichvat Zera, Vehi Shivcha Necharefet L'Ish. Now, Shichvat Zera, I mean, that's sort of weird. Does it really matter whether a person ejaculates to be over on any of these arayas? Or is you going to tell me you could sleep with an erevah, just make sure you don't ejaculate? I mean, we understand that lo yavo has nothing to do with ejaculation. So what does it mean when he talks about ejaculation with the case of a shivcha harufa? Remember that the simple case of shivcha harufa, it's a machlokas, but the simple case that Rashi learns in all of these Gemaras is a chatzi shivcha, chatzi bat chorin, who went ahead and got married to an eved ivri. So a shivcha is allowed to be married to an eved ivri, and an eved ivri is also allowed to be married to a Jewess. And over here, where she's half Jewess and half shivcha, she could be married to an eved ivri, but it's not a full-scale kedusha, because part of her is still a shivcha, and there's no din of kiddushin on a shivcha. There's only a din of shacking up with a shivcha, which is mutter for an Eved Ivri. As a matter of fact, that's part of his job. Part of the job of an Eved Ivri is to impregnate the shvachot of the person that bought him. So he works for him, as it says in the pasuk. He worked for you double the amount of work, because you have to work all night long on impregnating your shvachos. So in this case, he would be mutter to both halves of her, but not with a full kedusha. So what's the deal over there? So the Torah gives us this special halacha that in the event that she's a shivcha harufa, so the male has to bring bikoreti, yeah? The male has to bring a korban asham, and that's even if he does it on purpose, the asham is bechaper, and the female gets malchus, but there's no din of karas. There, the intercourse is defined as shichvat zera. Now, shichvat zera, we don't take to mean actual ejaculation, at least almost all of it. We'll talk about it a little bit later. And we take it to mean the way that you would normally fully penetrate at ejaculation. It's not normal to sort of start to pull out at ejaculation. That would be the moment of total penetration. So we're saying, okay, so what that means is Gmar Bia, total penetration, which we're referring to as Shichvat Zera. But that implies that only the Shivcha Harufa requires a full sense of Bia, which is called Gmar Bia, which would imply that a normal woman who is a Chi of Lav would be also considered to be Hara, would be sufficient intercourse. Well, maybe not. Maybe the Torah is telling me that using Shivcha Harufa as an example, the Torah is trying to tell me, in the event that the person that you slept with was only an Isser Lav and was not an Isser Karet, such as a Shivcha Harufa, then you would not be chayev with the hara. So maybe that's the point, that chay ve'lavim, all chay ve'lavim, are actually bigamar bia, because that would be learned out from using shivcha harufa as a model instead of as the part of the rule that is broken, right? Which proves the rule. That's how you're trying to use it. In the original sense of the exception proves the rule. Omer Rav Ashi, that's ridiculous. Because if we're meant to use Shivcha Harufa as a model, then we don't need the model, silly. Because since we didn't have any basis to extend the din of Hara to Chivei Lavim, then don't say anything. Why do you need to talk about Shichvat Zera in the context of Shivcha Harufa? Keep your mouth shut. Don't say a word. Lishtokra, let the Torah keep quiet when it comes to Shivcha Harufa, and then I won't have any basis for saying that Hara is sufficient. Since it only talks about Shivcha Harufa, it must mean that Shivcha Harufa is not the model, which is unnecessary, but rather is a unique case. Okay, that teaches what the din is of Chiyav Lavim. Okay, how about the lesser Chi of Lavim, the Chi of Lavim that only apply to Kohanim, right? So let's say a divorcee, or for Kohen Gadol, an Almana. How do we know that over there, there's also a Chi of with Hara? Ah, that is Gzeira Shava, because it says Kicha, Lo Yikach, it says all the time, by the Isurim Erva. It was like Isha Shir Yikach, Achoto, or Isha Obita. And it says by the Kohanim, it always uses the Lashon Yikach, Lo Yikach, Isha Grushami Baala, Lo Yikach, and so on. Okay, so that means it's the same. Okay, if it's the same, how though do we know Chayve Asay? What about the Isurim that are only Chayve Asay? How do we know those? I mean, that would be like a Dor Sheni of a Mitzri, and something like that. I mean, so do we know that that's true about even those cases, that it's also Chayve Esay? Yes. Chayve Esay, we learn out from Bia Bia. So it says Lo Yavo Mamzer, and it says by the Chayav Yesed Dor Shlishi Yavo, right? So therefore it means that it would be the same concept of what that Bia is. Okay, that's fair enough. How about a Yavam Lashuk? A Yavam Lashuk, well, it turns out there's actually a machlokas about whether Yavam Lashuk is a lav or Yavam Lashuk is actually an essay, and it would be maybe a lav ababik lala. Say we're going to see this later on. So whatever, who cares? If you would like the Mandi Omer, it's a lav. It's included in all of the lavim. If it's according to Mandi Omer, it's an essay. We just proved that all essay, that Yavama Yavo Aleon, only the Yavama, but not the other people. But whatever, it's also included. Sorry. I meant to restate that. I mean like this. How do we know that Hara is enough to affect Yibor? That's what I want to know. Because that was what our Mishnah said. Ah, that's also learned from Bia. Yavama Yavo Aleha. And Lo Yavo Mamzer Bikal Hashem. And we define the Lo Yavo Mamzer in terms of Hara. Therefore, Yavama Yavo Aleha is surprisingly Hara, even though the Torah seems to want to have children, and Hara won't get you all that far. Okay? How do we know that Hara is considered to be good enough to create Kiddushin? Maybe the three things that create Kiddushin, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia, maybe the Bia needs to be a Gemar Bia in order to basically close the relationship and to make it a real marriage. Well, that I learned not from Kicha, of course, because Ki Yikach Ish Isha, that is the fundamental pasuk. Ki Yikach Ish Isha Uba Allah. And then we had in the Arayas, Ish Asher Yikach Et, and what, insert the Erva. And over there, we proved that all of the Arayas are Bahara. So here too, Ki Yikach is a same concept of just going ahead and doing Hara. So that means everywhere but Shivcha Harufa, we seem to have proven that Hara is sufficient. So Omar Rava, why do we need the Pasuk of Shichvat Zera in three places that teach us that it's actually unique, and we talk about at least the norms of ejaculation. So why do I need Shifchat Zera Benoger Shifchat Harufa, as we saw? And then strangely, it says in Akremot, Vel Eshet Amitecha, Lo Titein Shechoftecha Lezora. Why does it mention anything about ejaculation when you're talking about adultery, right? If adultery is one of the arayas, then we already know that hara is really what's mean it's meant. And why does it mention in the case of a sota, where this woman went ahead and went into a private place with a guy that her husband had told her, I don't want you hanging around with that guy. And it says over there, V'shachav ish ita shichvat zera. What is shichvat zera? Why is that the point? Okay, well, I told you what the point is of the Shifcha Harufa, right? That the Shifcha Harufa is indeed important because over there, there is a chiev only of a karban asham if there was a gemar bia. So that I know. But what about Eshes Ish? So now we have to attack another favorite assumptions that we made. We seem to be focused on erections. Who told you that erections are important anyway? Maybe we would define intercourse as just loose and flaccid penises. I understand that you have a favorite activity that may involve an erection, but that doesn't mean that that's the way the Torah talks about intercourse. Why do you take that for granted? Ah, and here's the point. I need that extra pasuk to tell me that flaccid penises are not called intercourse. That's the point. So Eshet Ish comes to tell me, Prat Lemeshamesh mate. That is, that's what we call mate, is a dead penis. So if he's not able to have an erection there, and he's not considered to be chayev, even for Eshet Ish. But wait a minute, isn't that a machlokas? So that actually flaccidity is a ptur on any arayas. But what about according to the Mandi Omar, who says that a mace ba'arayot is actually still chayev? So what does he do with this pasuk of shechvat zera? Because we don't find ejaculation without an erection. We're talking about over here, somebody is a necrophilist and he sleeps with a dead woman, not with a dead penis. And therefore, it's coming to tell me that you would be putter if that woman is not alive. Because you might think that since we know that a person is still called your relative, your shared flesh, even after death, because it uses that lashon in terms of the dinim of a kohen to be metame, ki im l'she'eiro hakarov elav. And from there we learn out your shared flesh is a reference to a wife, and that there's a chiyuv to be metame for a kohen if his wife dies, and it's still called she'er, and she'er is what it refers to all the time in the parasha of Arayos. Therefore, I might have thought that even if a married woman is dead, and this guy's a nut, and he sleeps with this dead woman who is married to somebody, you might think that there's a chiyuv. Therefore, we need to say that a mishamish with a mate, and that is called, for some reason, a zera, because it has to be meaningful. The zera has to be meaningful with a dead woman. The presence of sperm is obviously meaningless. Okay, and why do I need the pasuk of shechvat zera that appears by a sota? Look at Tanya. The Braisa says like this. It says by the sota, shechvat zera, that comes to tell me something else. What? Something else? What's the something else? Ah, in the case of a sota, something else is very important. Because remember that the sota only becomes asura once the husband has said to her, do not be alone with so-and-so, right? So then what we're talking about is, I don't want you to be in a position where you can end up having sex with so-and-so. So what would it mean when you say something else? Amrav Sheshes, well, something else means where a guy says to his wife, listen, I don't want you to be sleeping with anal intercourse with this guy, thinking that it doesn't bother me because, after all, he's leaving my own issues untouched. No, no, no. And do not be alone with that guy. Okay, so if he specified that, that is indeed something else. So because of that, the Torah is stressing. Only if the guy does not say that, he says shechvat zera, meaning he doesn't have to say shechvat zera, but he doesn't have to say, if he says something that excludes that iser of shechvat zera. And he's saying it's bedavka, not in a mokum of zera. So that wouldn't be included. So that's what I think, says Rav Sheshes. Said Ravat Rav Sheshes, that's ridiculous. The Torah has already made it clear that it doesn't care about where Bia is. Anal intercourse, vaginal intercourse, all the same. So once that's true, then why would I have thought that I can use that to tell me that it would be usher? If it's enough that it's not going to be us, you're telling me, if he specifies, that can't be true, because there is no difference to the Torah. And therefore, whether it comes to a site or anything else, it makes no sense to say that she would not be a seita, and if all that she was involved in was anal intercourse, that is the iser of Eshes Ish. So that can't be what it's coming to tell me. What it's coming to tell me when it says it doesn't count is where he says, I don't want you fooling around with that guy. Derech Evarim. Derech Evarim means that there's no actual intercourse. So there's no real genital content, but there's all kinds of other contact. And that other contact, if he specifies, I don't want that, so then that would not be included in the sotah. That's what it means. Oh, come on. I mean, obvious. Look, the Torah talks about serious issues. If you want to go around feeling up some woman, I mean, the fact that you may not like that as a husband or whatever, it's not going to be called adultery. That's the same old broomstick issue. We define things technically. There is no such thing as having a feel-up session, which is now called arias. So how can I think such a thing? That if a guy is mekane ishto for something else, that somehow or other, that would be an actual kina, first sight. Pritzut ha'asarachman, what you think that the Torah is going to call just pritzut. How do you say pritzut in English? I don't even know. I mean, it's worse than inappropriate, but it's like, I don't know, maybe...
Lewdness? Lewdness.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I don't know. Lewd is behavior lewd or thoughts are lewd? I don't know.
Lewd behavior.
Is there such a thing as
what?
Lewd? I don't know whether lewd is a proper adjective on behavior.
Lascivious?
What?
Lascivious.
I'm not familiar with it.
Lewd and lascivious. Whoever's not familiar with that expression?
I'm not familiar with that, no.
Huh?
Assiduous?
Lascivious.
Yeah. Oh, lascivious. Yes,
they're synonyms. They're actually listed
as lasciviousness, yes. No, they're not necessarily synonyms. When it says they're synonyms, it doesn't mean that they're adjectives that are appropriate in all positions. It just means they have the same meaning. But I'm not convinced that you can have lewd. But maybe, I mean, I may be wrong. Maybe you could have lewd behavior. Okay, but anyway, we understand. So we're talking about pritzusa. The Torah is not going to ask a pritzusa and call that to be licentious. Dvorah is bringing the Italian for licentiousness. That's also true. Lascivious, licentious, fine. So that's ridiculous. I don't need a puss to tell me that warning her about such behavior, pritzus, is not going to be a din of sota. Obviously not. Ah, says Abaya, I then say what it's talking about over here is it's not called a sota where you told your wife, I don't want that guy's penis in touch with you genitally. Now, I don't answer. Obviously, penetration is considered to be a real aishas ish. But over here, all you told her is, look, I know you guys are playing around. Just keep his penis out of it. Now, would that not be considered a soita? And that's what it's coming to exclude from the din of a soita. Yes, I understand. That is valuable because that sure sounds awfully close. But now the question is, that may actually be intercourse. That's the problem because that's a machlokas. So, if you say that the meaning of hara is at least to get the corona inside, okay. But what about if you hold, according to the Mandi Omar, that hara is actually only lying a penis against a vagina? That itself is considered to be hara, so then this din would not make sense because then you're saying that if a person says, don't have intercourse, that it's not a seita? What's the difference how to have intercourse? So that wouldn't make any sense, right? So then what is the pasuk coming to add? Therefore, I go back to the way that Rava said it. And forget about what Abaya says. I say that we're talking about that the guy says, I don't want you fooling around with her, derech evarim, without intercourse. And nonetheless, I need such a pasuk. Why? Because a sota is a special case. Asota is not a normal case of an adulteress. Asota is a case where a husband tells a woman in advance that I do not want you alone with this guy. And only over there is there the whole process in which she becomes asura because of the fact that the husband had already indicated his feelings before. So therefore, if it's in terms of the Gemara's raglayim ladov or whatever it is, it does boil down to a husband's preference, doesn't it? Because it's unique. So I might have thought that since the holding of Saita's big beta, the Baal Tala Rahman, the Torah made this whole din of a Saita defined by what a husband says to his wife. Well, this guy definitely is objecting. He says, I do not want you fooling around with that guy. I don't care how you're going about it. Even if you think you can get away with murder because you keep his penis out of the equation over here, it don't matter to me. So then I would have thought that since he specified that it doesn't matter to him and that he considers his wife to be an adulteress just because she's fooling around with the guy, maybe that's enough. Indeed. And therefore, I need a pasuk to tell me, look, we don't change our definitions based on this husband's preferences. And therefore, kamash balan, that we do not change the halacha. That's the point. So the last thing that we said was that the havamina, in terms of the kinui vestira of the saita, since it might be dependent on what it is that the husband defines as his akpada, maybe over there the Torah added a new issue that even inappropriate, or I forgot to look up whether lewd is actually correctly used that way, but lewd behavior would be considered to be sufficient to be a saita. So we left it at that. Okay, so now we're up to Omar Shmuel, and Omar Shmuel is four lines up from one third of the way up in the page. And Shmuel says, Ha'ara zo nishika. So Shmuel's idea is that you do not even need any type of real penetration, even talking about coronal penetration, which is the way we understood the simple concept of Ha'ara. All you need is genital kissing. What is the meaning of genital kissing? So you just lay a penis across a vagina and that's enough without actually entering. So he holds, mashal, why is that? Because mashallah adam, sheminiach etzba'al piv, imagine, put your finger and put it against your lips. Of course, it's a vaginal concept, lips, right? So labia. So now put your finger across your lips. Don't your lips move inward? Yes. So in that sense, there's a type of penetration. And therefore, we call even that hara. So mashallah adam sheminiach etzba'al piv. So you're pressing now your lips inward. So now remember that when it came to the Shivcha Charufa, we had a special limud, because over there the Torah is specified that we're talking about sleeping with a Shivcha Charufa Shichvat Zera. Now, what exactly is added by that Shichvat Zera? Says Rabbi Yochanan, well, what's added is that you need to complete your Bia. But what complete means is that all that you need to do is insert the Atara, the corona of the penis, and that would be sufficient. Now, obviously, he's agreeing with Shmuel, because if he's saying that just insertion of the Atara is considered to be complete Bia, and that the addition of the words of Shechvat Zera only add that much, so what could be less than that that would still consider to be Bia? He must agree with Shmuel. Less than that would just be Nishika, is what Shmuel held. So we're calling that Shichvat Zera. Now, the thing to recognize over here is that we're talking really about a different ideas of the nature of Bia. The problem with Hara, the way that we've understood it, whether according to Shmuel, according to the way that we've taken in until now, which is Achmasas Atara, is that if you recognize that the structure of the penis is such that the Atara itself is not really a Shichvat Zera type of Bia. And that's because the nerve endings that stimulate the ejaculation are nerve endings that are on the actual goof. It's on the shaft of the penis. It's not on the corona. And because of that, Shichvat Zera, Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan, since it doesn't mean literally ejaculation, because why should it? That's the way most of the Rishonim learn. What would ejaculation have to do with anything? But the idea over here is that we're talking about the type of Bia that could lead to ejaculation. So that would mean that there, according to the way we're understanding it, is that there's actual insertion. So that way, if there's actual insertion, even beyond the idea of just the Atara, so then we're talking about the type of Bia that will stimulate to ejaculation. Masha Enkein, if we're talking about just a concept of penetration, so then I understand that a penetration is defined by penetration of a body part. It doesn't really matter whether it's the type of penetration that is necessarily going to be sexually stimulating or not. It's the penetration, which is the lotion of Bia going into somewhere. So that going into somewhere is a sense of intimacy with another person in which you're going into that person. It doesn't really matter whether it happens to be sexually stimulating or not. And that's why we don't call it Shichvat Zera. But since by Shivcha Harufa we're essentially demanding that it does have to be sexually stimulating, so because of that, we understood that by Shivcha Harufa we need more than an insertion of the Atara. But if what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that no, actually, we're going to see what this means in terms of Shmuel, and that actually the idea of the concept of Shichvat Zera has nothing to do with nerve structures or sexual stimulation. That's not the point. The point is that if you would ejaculate the way that Shmuel is talking about, you wouldn't be getting any sperm into a place where they can do anything. And therefore, if you're only talking about Nishika, it's an extremely ineffective way to reproduce. So if you're talking about Shichvat Zera, there's got to be penetration at least enough that if there is ejaculation, that then it's going to cause pregnancy, or at least more likely to cause pregnancy. That's the difference. So that means that we have very different concepts here of what the issues are, Bichlal. Most of Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says that can't be, because the Braita says like this. When it says, by Shivcha Harufa Shichvat Zera, Eino Chayav Ela Al Bi'at HaMeiruk. Now, here's the problem. And it's amazing how Mishnahs and Braitas are structured not to give us information. And remember that this is done on purpose, because the nature of Teresh Shebaal Peh is Bedavka to leave open as many questions as possible. And therefore, we will always choose the worst word because we want to allow for all possible interpretations. Now, of course, the problem with that strange word, B.S., miruk, what the heck is that? Well, the word miruk has two completely different meanings. Miruk can come from the Lashon of pouring out. Lohorik mikeli al keli, like we have by Moav, right? They haven't been poured from one container to another. Or like we use when it comes to kachim. You have to be memarek the kelim. So that means to pour water in and then clean it out. So then that would mean ejaculation. Miruk. So you're emptying out the ejaculate. But it doesn't have to mean that at all. Because remember back in Yuma where we had the idea that the Kohen Gadol is going to be shochet, the tamid. He gives it to another Kohen and that Kohen is memarko. Now, the memarko over there simply means to finish up. Now, obviously, when people use the word finish when it comes to intercourse, they're talking about ejaculation, but that's not what it has to mean. So, my gosh, an amazing choice of the Tana to still leave us in the dark about, are we actually talking about Shichvat Zera in terms of ejaculation, or are we talking about Shichvat Zera in terms of stimulation? Amazing. So naturally, because it allows for boshitas, we actually end up having boshitas la'alocha. So Rashi learns over here, biyatamiruk is the language of ejaculation. And therefore, he says that what we're talking about over here is the addition by Shifcha Charufa specifically, and I'm assuming that when you're talking about miruk, so we thought that that means biruk gid. So there you're talking about the actual shaft. Gid means the shaft, and atara is corona. So because of that, if we're talking about specifically ejaculation, so then lechora, what we mean is, and this is the kasha on Rabbi Yochanan, that you cannot be talking about only inserting the atara, because then how would we call that miruk? So this is the way that Rashi understands it. And that would mean actual ejaculation and the stimulation that comes, that causes ejaculation. Masha Inken Tosva says no. Ejaculation is unimportant. And it's clear that that's true, because when we had the same lashon of Shechva Zera by Eishes Ish, nobody claimed over there that there needed to be ejaculation to Aser and Eishes Ish, to be Mechayev on an Eishes Ish. So why would be different by Shifcha Charufa, Tainus Tesis? And therefore, again, what we're talking about over here is only the way that Tosis learns is, by the way, the Tosis read agrees with Rashi that it actually does mean ejaculation. But, I mean, other Rishonim, like the Rush, agree with Tosis that we're talking about over here. Full insertion. Maybe that's the Rambam. The Rambam says full insertion. And if you learn that the idea over here is specifically an area which is going to cause sexual stimulation, so then it could mean sufficient insertion beyond the atara to give that stimulation, but not necessarily complete insertion. So you would understand miruk gid means, just miruk means complete, leaving nothing out. Like we say in English, he went all the way. So all the way would mean all the way. In other words, it would mean complete insertion. That would be the point. So we have all of these different shitas, but the bottom line is, as I say, the Rambam learns what we're talking over here. Normally, we talk about the idea of the chiyav being not like Shmuel, but like being hachnasas atara, is considered to be the first stage that the Torah is mechayev on, which is hara. And the second stage would be complete insertion, which is gmar bia. And that from that point of the hachnasas atara until gmar bia, we're talking about, according to the Rambam, we're talking about hara. Fine. Anyway, but it certainly seems that if we're talking about miruk gid, that either we're talking about actual ejaculation, like Rashi, or we're talking about full insertion, like the Rambam, so then how could Rabbi Yochanan get away with saying that even by Shivcha Charufa, that the meaning of Shechvat Zera is only about where it is that ejaculation would end up? That's the question. Would it end up being effective or not? Here the Braita is saying, not like Rabbi Yochanan. Says the Gemara, maybe Miruk Gid is wrong. Maybe Miruk means the miruk even of the atara. Now, if you're talking about ejaculation, fine, okay, you could say that's at least enough to be able to effectively create pregnancy. If you're talking about stimulations, you'll have to say the lesser stimulation that comes from the hachnasas atara. What can you do? But at least this way, Rabbi Yochanan would work. Ki ata Rav Dimi omer Rabbi Yochanan. But when Rav Dimi came along, he said that hara is achnasas atara. But Rabbi Yochanan a minute ago said that hara, that achnasas atara is gemarabia, and that's called shechvat zera by a shechvat charufa, and that's a contradiction. Which one did Rabbi Yochanan say? So they said to Rav Dimi, how can you say that? When Rabbi Bar Bar Chana came, he said that Rabbi Yochanan said that gemarbia would be achnasat atara. So how are you saying that? Says Rav Dimi. Well, I'll tell you how. Either I'm a liar or he's a liar, okay? That's how. You want to ask me how? I'm not responsible for how he says it. You want to call me a liar? Call me a liar. I'm not going to sit here and argue with the facts. I'm telling you this is what I heard. Hey, he wants to tell you something else? Fine. You can listen to him. I don't care. Anyway, Ke'asa Ravin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now, when Ravin came, he said the same thing that Rav Dimi said about what Rabbi Yochanan said. Namely, that Hara is Hakanasat HaTorah, and therefore it could not have been the way that it was reported by Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, that by Shivcha Harufa, Hara is already considered to me to be Marbiya. It makes no sense. Now, the question over here is, what Ravin says over here is definitely the opposite of what Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said, correct? And Rav Dimi. I mean, it's not only Ravin, the Ravin and Rav Dimi. They're both saying that Rabbi Bar Bar Chana is off the wall because he claimed that Hakanasas HaTorah is considered to be Gemar Bia. That's definitely wrong. Okay, now the question is, are they also necessarily also saying that Rabbi Yochanan was arguing on Shmuel? Because Shmuel said that Nishika was considered to be the sufficient to be Hara. So was Rabbi Yochanan, the way they understand it, and he says that the idea over here, the first way, it was exactly like Shmuel. Because when Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said that Hakanasas HaTorah is Gmar Bia, the only way to understand Hara is like Shmuel. But is that still true? Not necessarily. Because what we could say is that we have actually a window from Nishika all the way through up until Hakanasat HaTorah. All of that may be considered to be Hara. In other words, nobody necessarily said that since Rabbi Yochanan says that Hara includes Hakanasat HaTorah, that therefore Hara is only Hakanasat HaTorah. It may be Rabbi Yochanan, according to what they just said, would agree that from the moment of Nishika all the way through Hakanasat HaTorah, we're talking about Hara. Possibly, I don't know. And then that would mean that we're only addressing the last part of Hara. So that's what we'd like to know. Are they necessarily saying that over here, that Nishika, according to Rabbi Yochanan, would be nothing? Or would he also agree to that? He says, well, not necessarily. We might be talking about an actual window from the point of Nishika through Hakanasat HaTorah. That entire period is still all part of the beginning. So it's Hara, Hara Karila, and they might not necessarily be saying there's a machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan. Now, when Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda, when he came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that Rabbi Yochanan said, Hara is Hakanasat HaTorah, and Gmar Bia means Gmar Bia Mamash. Again, what Gmar Bia Mamash means, as I mentioned, big machlokas. Because if you're learning that the idea over here is just stimulation, so then it would mean any part of post the Hakanasas HaTorah would be considered to be a Gmar Bia. Some actually say that. Furthermore, it would be a shaila whether there needed to be ejaculation, which is Rashi, Tesis Reed. Or it could mean, like the Rambam says, no, if we're talking about Gmar Bia Mamash, then we're talking about Hakanasa completely. And even more, we would also require, according to Rashi, ejaculation. And according to the other Rishonim, which almost everybody holds that ejaculation per se is not important, then it would mean, like the Rambam says, possibly Gmar Bia, complete Gmar Bia, including the entire shaft. Mikan ve'ela. But from there on, eno ela nishika, from there on means if it's less than that, then it's considered to be nishika and your potter. In which case, according to this, he is arguing on Shmuel because he said from that point on, it's only nishika and it's not considered to be hara. So now we weren't sure. But here we can see that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, the way that we learn. By the way, just to know the language, remember from what the entire sugya in Nida, where we were learning about the genital structures, remember that according to Chazal, not only that, but every time in the Gemara Brachos as well, remember that we have a completely different vision of how to talk about up and down on the penis. Because in the Gemara, down means down towards the ground. So from that point on, so this is the cultural difference, because of course the goyim are always talking about looking at your penis and it's nice and erect and so on. So you're talking about going up. In the Gemara, you're talking about going down, because you're talking about standing, and therefore your penis is hanging down. And from that point on, in the Gemara means less than actually the Atara. That's exactly the language here. It's perfectly consistent. So from that point on means in the Gemara less than that, meaning only Nashika would not be considered to be Hara. Another beautiful cultural difference in the way Klal Yisrael imagines things and the rest of the world imagines things.